Good evening and welcome to our panel discussion on Asperger's syndrome and post-secondary education challenges. I'm Bill Miller, and this program is being presented as part of WCVE Forum, our regular Sunday evening forum program here on WCVE-FM. I'd like to introduce members of our panel, and then we will briefly introduce the topic and then open up our forum to questions. Our panel members include Eric Larson, PhD. He's Vice President for Learning and Program Development at Charterhouse School, United Methodist Family Services. Donald Oswald, PhD, Director, Diagnostics and Research at Commonwealth Autism Service. John Toscano, who is President and CEO of Commonwealth Autism Service, and Corey Wood, a student with Asperger's Syndrome, and Nolan Parks, another student with Asperger's Syndrome. We're recording this program on Monday evening, April 18th, and we have a live audience in our studio here at WCVE Public Radio. April is Autism Awareness Month, and we have joined with Commonwealth Autism Service and the Charterhouse School at UMFS to host this panel discussion on one aspect of the autism spectrum, that is Asperger's syndrome. Asperger's syndrome is a developmental disorder that affects a person's ability to socialize and communicate effectively with others. Children with Asperger's syndrome typically exhibit social awkwardness and an all-absorbing interest in specific topics. Doctors group Asperger's syndrome with other conditions that are called autistic spectrum disorders or pervasive developmental disorders. These disorders all involve problems with social skills and communication. Asperger's syndrome is generally thought to be at the milder end of this spectrum. The organizations that are here tonight have formed a partnership to offer a program service entitled Courage to Succeed that will offer unique supports for young people with Asperger's syndrome to navigate the social and organizational skills challenges faced in college so as to maximize their intellectual and academic assets. At this point, I'd like to call on John Toscano, the President and CEO of Commonwealth Autism Service, to give us a more detailed description of Asperger's syndrome. John, welcome.
Thank you, Bill. I appreciate what you've already offered to the listening audience. And the items I would add really have to do with some historic reference. We have known about autism since 1943 when Leo Kanner first identified it. Interestingly enough, working at almost exactly the same time, Hans Asperger identifies this subset of the autism spectrum in 1944, and of course it bears his name. What we know, however, is that for a very long time, really until the work of Lorna Wing, Michael Rutter in London, everybody believed autism was this discrete condition, and if you had autism, it looked the same and it behaved the same in all individuals. We know that not to be the case. We know it to be a spectrum disorder, and Asperger's syndrome is on an end of that spectrum. What I would add to that, however, is although the definition might suggest it is a milder form of autism, and it is, but the terms high functioning and low functioning and mild and severe, I think need to be somewhat understood within the context of the real challenges. All people who are on the autism spectrum are challenged by social interaction, communication, and some behavioral issues. What we have in Asperger's syndrome is people with normal or above normal intelligence, and because of those gifts, as an offset, if you will, to some of the challenges, we recognize what the amazing potential is of people with Asperger's syndrome if there are supports in place to deal with those social challenges and those communication challenges and some of those behavioral challenges. And that's a little bit of a lead-in to the reason why we've come together with our partners to try to pull together a program that will be specifically designed to provide those prescriptive supports to support people to be as successful as they can be. As we have spoken before, this model is based on one that I participated in and helped shape in the UK back in the late 1990s, and that program has been operating for more than 15 years, having served many hundreds of young people with Asperger's syndrome.
Dr. Oswald, maybe I can call on you to give your perspective as someone closely involved with young people with this disorder.
One of the things that strikes me about this is that The young adult period is a particularly challenging time for folks with Asperger's disorder, because it's a time when typically folks are expected to kind of go out on their own, to become more independent. And many young adults with Asperger's disorder have really struggled with the development of independence, partly because I think of the fundamental social difference that makes it difficult to engage with other people, to establish relationships outside the family, to learn some of the independent skills that seem to come naturally for many of the folks. And so this is a particularly challenging time, I think, for individuals with Asperger's disorder. One of the other things that contributes to that is that our public school system has struggled to serve people with Asperger's, but it is developing a service network that provides reasonable supports. And when folks then move on to higher education, some of those supports are not as obvious, at least, and we have to work a little harder to ensure that they're available to people.
Dr. Larson, anything to add from your perspective at UMFS?
Over the last several decades, we have worked with a variety of young people with disabilities, and when we had the opportunity to partner with Commonwealth Autism Service to begin to develop some unique programs for youth with Asperger's, we really found out the incredible potential that these young people have when we provide them with the right supports. So that's what we will continue to do as we develop this program.
Nolan, I want to thank you for being here tonight. Nolan is one of our students, and we had the opportunity to meet a couple of weeks ago and talk a little bit about situation that you've found yourself in. I was touched by the fact that your reason for being here tonight is that, as you said, you really are hoping to help others.
Well, personally, I found that, at least in my case, that it's really hard to socialize with other people. And when it comes to activities like school, it's really hard to communicate with the teacher. And personally, I can't really see outside of what the teacher specifically tells me. So I'm also having a really hard time understanding what a teacher says, and also understanding what other students are trying to say to me. And so mainly my biggest problem is the social awkwardness and such things like that.
Thank you. Corey, did you have anything you'd like to add from your perspective as a student?
Well, from my perspective, I've also had trouble socializing. I'm not interested in sports as my peers are. I'm more focused on the military stuff, and because of that, I don't relate to anybody as many people. And that's what I found most difficult about having Asperger's.
Yeah. Thank you. John Toscano, President and CEO, Commonwealth Autism Service. The name of the program is Courage to Succeed, and as you mentioned, it has its origins, I guess, in the UK. Do you want to give us some more background on the project?
Really, it's taking a look at, and Eric can speak to this in greater detail as well, but it's really looking from a strengths-based perspective at what the students have. And from the perspective of strength, which, and I'll give you a small vignette, you read any definition of Asperger's syndrome and autism as well, but particularly in Asperger's, you're going to hear about intense interest in a very narrow area of focus, oftentimes considered to be obsessional around something. And yet an obsession, the rest of us get to call them hobbies, by the way, but an obsession has the potential clearly to get in the way of an individual. But on the other hand, it really kind of speaks to their passion and their interest. So if you took a strengths-based perspective on that, it would give you a window into a relationship with a young person, and then maybe look creatively at how that might turn into, for example, employment. We have a young man we've worked with for a number of years who, for example, was identified as being obsessional about the weather. He holds a master's degree in meteorology today, and he works for the National Weather Service. It's an example at really approaching this from a strengths-based perspective. And the courage to do that, i.e. the courage to succeed, I think is a well-taken term that Eric has utilized to describe this program.
Eric, your name has been mentioned a couple of times. Did you want to delve more into the project?
From our perspective, any human being who is a little bit outside what we consider to be normal has to have courage in order to make their way in society. So the reason that we call this program Courage to Succeed is that the young people we aim to support and assist is that we know it'll take courage. It takes courage to step into that spot, acknowledging that these are my difficulties. I think that both Corey and Nolan shared with us what their challenges are, and that takes courage. So that's the intent of what we attempt to do, is to help the young people find a spot in themselves where they identify, these are my challenges, it takes courage to address those, and then, from our perspective, as adult navigators, supporters, and helpers, for us to, in clinical, targeted manners, to provide the support that will help them be successful.
That's Eric Larson. He's Vice President for Learning and Program Development at Charterhouse School of United Methodist Family Services. This question could really be for many folks on the panel, so I'll just throw it out. Would it be helpful to talk about some of the services that the Courage to Succeed program provides? What does it offer to the student?
Maybe I should pick up on that one.
Eric, thank you.
As John mentioned earlier, the program is based on the experiences that he and others gained in the UK some years back. But the day will start in the morning where the students in the program will be meeting at our location. And in the morning, they'll check in with one another, with our staff, and make sure that they are organized for the skills that are ahead of them, the tasks that are at the community college that they will be attending. We have established an arrangement with J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, so the students in the program will then be transported or transport themselves to the community college where they will take classes. Our staff will be there with them, will help navigate the daily activities, both the social networks as well as some of the academic challenges at the school. Our staff will be there throughout the days, making sure that homework assignments are understood, that any issues, challenges that existed. Nolan was mentioning sometimes it was hard for him to really understand what the teacher was saying or what some of the other students would be saying or what they would be talking about. Our staff will be there to support throughout the day. When in the afternoon, when classes are over, we will all huddle up back again at the school, and we'll have the opportunity to look at how to organize homework assignments, class assignments, but there will also be an opportunity to talk about social situations that were challenging or social situations that were successful during the day at the college.
You mentioned that students may need a certain level of preparedness to enter the program. And again, this would be for any member of the panel. What kinds, can you give our audience a sense of what kinds of skills and abilities might be prerequisites for entering the program?
John. Well, I think we're less focused, Bill, on sort of the resume of skills that they bring. We recognize the challenges, and of course this will be individual, but we recognize in general the challenges that young people with Asperger's syndrome are faced with. Organizational difficulties is a common experience. Along with that, managing anxiety is a common experience. We find data tells us that about one-third of all young people with Asperger's syndrome will also have a secondary challenge having to do with depression and, in some cases, some obsessive-compulsive disorder. So we know what the challenges are, but I think the willingness to partake in this courageous path to paraphrase the name of the program, is really what we're looking for. Students that can benefit from what's on offer, but also are willing to take some of the risks that are inherent with self-actualization, admitting to oneself what the challenges are, and then taking advantage of what's being offered and going forward from there.
Right. How is the program, how does it work with individual students? I assume that each student has a specially prepared experience with the program.
We have already had an open house where we have met with several family members and several of the young people who potentially will be signing up for the program. So, as we get closer to understanding who will be participating, we will sit down, we will meet with the students, we will meet with their families, and we will begin to develop individualized, centered plans that are based on the strength and the needs of each of the young people. We potentially, in those conversations, might be assessing that there are certain assessments that we would be doing, but we do not come in with a prepackaged approach to this. We come in to this with wanting to meet the students and their families with whatever they perceive the needs are, and then develop individualized services for each young student. We also do, however, believe that as students are gathered at our school site, that there is value in the support of peers. So there will be a number of support groups where the young people with staff will be talking about the challenges and be supporting one another, and will be learning from one another in the areas that John was talking about.
It's certainly the case that many folks with Asperger's would come to a program like this with more than adequate academic preparation, and so we anticipate that many folks will be prepared to handle the academic material quite well. And typically for many folks with Asperger's, the challenges that they confront in higher education are not an inability to learn the material, but rather being stymied by the social demands of the classroom or the peer group, and that those are the things that get in the way. John mentioned anxiety, which is a critical feature that many folks suffer from, and that can really cause it to be difficult for them to do the kind of things that they know how to do. It isn't that they cannot learn the material, but may find themselves unable to perform because of anxiety. And the supports then are designed to around those issues that mental health issues and social skill issues that would keep folks from being successful.
That's Dr. Donald Oswald, who is Director of Diagnostics and Research at Commonwealth Autism Service. Corey and Nolan, based on what you've heard about the program thus far, are there elements of it that appeal to you? Are there aspects of the program that give you some encouragement? Sure.
All right. Well, the main thing that really made me feel I've been to a lot of schools in the past, and supposedly I should have fit in normally, but that didn't quite work out. And now that I have the chance, the opportunity to go to a program that's designed specifically to help me overcome my social awkwardness and help me communicate better with the professors and other classmates, I feel like there's actually hope where before I haven't had any. So that's what I'm mainly looking forward to through listening about the program.
Thank you, Nolan. Corey, any thoughts?
I think the chance to learn how to socialize with people is what I'm looking forward to the most, because I do have trouble socializing with people around me.
Let me reintroduce members of our panel for our listening audience. This is a panel discussion about Asperger's syndrome and post-secondary education challenges. that is being co-sponsored by WCVE, Commonwealth Autism Service, and United Methodist Family Services. And our panel members are John Toscano, President and CEO of Commonwealth Autism Service, Eric Larson, who is Vice President for Learning and Program Development at Charterhouse School of United Methodist Family Services, Donald Oswald, Director of Diagnostics and Research at Commonwealth Autism Service, and two students with Asperger's Syndrome, Corey Wood and Nolan Parks. Wanted to turn, I hope it's appropriate for me to ask about sort of the other side of the coin. We've talked about the student. I want to get a little bit more into the involvement of parents, but what about teachers? What do we expect of teachers? What kind of, is there training? Is there any kind of special preparation from that angle?
Well, if we're talking about our partners at J. Sargent Reynolds Community College, we certainly have a very strong commitment from the president and an equally strong commitment from the vice president, who is in charge of, program development on that campus. There is difficulty in making mandatory any training for the college faculty. However, we certainly are going to have training and information available to folks if they have an interest, and we're going to find creative ways to introduce that to them. What we understand, the realities of, a community college campus, a four-year college campus, is it's a very busy place. People are moving around quite a bit. And the nature of an academic semester, 15 weeks can go by very, very quickly. And if a student feels disengaged because of miscommunication, inability to relate to a faculty member, if that is addressed immediately and that faculty member knows something about the condition, that faculty member is willing to engage with the student, make an accommodation, go back over either material or the request for how to complete an assignment as an example, that goes a long way into getting that student off on the right track. But if that sort of hangs in limbo for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, an entire semester can be lost with that misinformation and that lack of contact. So because it is a community college and it's local to us, we're feeling pretty optimistic that we're going to be able to mitigate those relationships, help students manage those relationships, and hopefully engage those faculty that will be teaching the students so that they'll have a better understanding of some of the special needs that these students have.
It sounds to me as though the socialization aspects are as much connected with individual teachers and faculty members as they are with fellow students.
Well, we have always said that, in the ideal, we are not asking the community to meet people with autism or people with Asperger's syndrome 100% of the way. But we are asking that, in this case of this particular program, these students have the courage to succeed and that the community is equally welcoming and it can be viewed as a 50-50 kind of a proposition. Social skills are learnable. They are teachable. We have all learned our social skills, and students who have this challenge can also be taught and they can learn. And we can have a community that's a little less critical, a little more tolerant, as those students are trying to make their way through that process.
That's John Toscano, President of Commonwealth Autism Service. I wanted to go back and ask about the role of parents. What part do the parents play in this process? How much information do they get? How much involvement do they have with students as this program is initiated and continues?
That's a good question, and I think it's hard to give a answer that will fit everyone, because these young people are at an age where they actually are beginning to develop their independence and have this need for not to be having their parents involved in every decision that they have to make. So again, we will have to negotiate that pathway with each family, with each young person, to make certain that whatever the families would like to know, to the extent that the young people are comfortable with that, that we will be sharing that information. But it's natural that in this context, the strongest supporters that these young people have are their families. So naturally, there will be high levels of involvement But the details will have to be worked out.
Nolan, you've spoken before about the involvement that your parents have had over the years with your educational process. Do you have any thoughts on the role that they might play in this sort of new endeavor for you?
Well, personally, the one thing in my life I don't think I could ever live without is my parents. And right now, I totally depend on them all. And they're pretty bright, and they try to help me as much as I can. So I really think that I'm going to open myself up to them a lot through the program, and I know that they'll help me through it. So
The program is based at a community college here in the Richmond area. How long does the program typically function? Is it a two-year program, a four-year program? What's the time span, or do we know at this point, since it's still under development?
Well, the program model that we've based this on was a three-year program in the UK, and we think 3 years to complete the equivalent of an associate's degree might be the right pace. Now, to make it more person-specific, it may slow down more than that, it may accelerate more than that, but generally speaking, the idea that this might take 3 years in which the student could make their way through a community college curriculum towards, receiving an associate's degree. But I think it's important that we emphasize for the listeners that although this is in part about academic, pace and academic credentialing, if it were just about that, there would be no need for a prescriptive program. What has to happen in those 3 years on the social side, on the life skills side, is every bit as important and, in fact, more important. It's why students typically have not succeeded, not because they haven't had the academic acumen, or, in fact, and, hopefully the students won't mind, but we've heard from our students that they have done well academically and actually left school because of the anxiety and some of the other issues. So what has to happen in those 3 years is more than just moving along a curriculum on the academic side. It's moving on the social curriculum as well.
Yeah. John, you earlier mentioned that there was a student who went on to get an MS in meteorology. Does the Courage to Succeed program look beyond the three? I assume it looks beyond the 3 years into what the students progress to after the associate's degree.
At this point, we honestly, Bill, we have not thought a whole lot beyond the associate's degree. As you develop a pilot project of this nature, we will kind of have to take it and learn from our experiences, just as this program is a result of a pilot program that we operated last year during the summer. We began to realize that there was a need for older students with Asperger's to begin to explore social skills, independent living skills, pre-employment skills. And we operated a program last summer as a precursor for what we are doing now. So maybe if you invited us back in 2 years, we will tell you about what the plans are. At that time, I can't tell you. At this time, there are no plans for anything after the associate degree.
Yeah. Well, we'll make an appointment to do that down the road. Maybe we could talk a little bit about some of the specific areas. Are there? Do you work with the teachers on their academic advising skills? Are there differences in say testing processes for students in the program?
I think it's reasonable that some of the students in the program might require some accommodations, some testing accommodations or seating or note-taking accommodations. But I think it's likely also that there will be some just simple strategies and conventions that teachers can take advantage of to, as John said, to meet these students halfway so that they don't have to go all the way and face all of the challenges that typical students would. For example, a teacher might in introducing a class might want to be a little clearer about, so what are the expectations of this class? Be fairly explicit about what are the rules and conventions that he or she expects of the students. Many college students are able to kind of pick up on the nonverbal signals and just the general sort of expectations, and students with Asperger's, I think, find it more difficult to do that, and so it's helpful for teachers to be a little bit more explicit, to be a little bit more clear about exactly what the expectations are.
You spoke about, Dr. Oswald, seating and note-taking and so forth. That sort of hits at the idea that routine is an important part of the process?
Certainly, routines are useful for many folks with Asperger's disorder. They find them, often will find them to be helpful, to be comforting, and to provide them with a sense that that we can get through this okay. That unexpected things are often a challenge, and again would tend to sort of heighten the anxiety and reduce whatever competence folks have even.
Dr. Larson, I see you shaking your head. Do you have something to add on that point?
I think that what Donald was saying is very important, the sense of routines, the sense of supports, and the opportunity for students to be encouraged by our staff on site to schedule individual meetings, to talk with the instructors there, the opportunity if they find that they need some supports, to talk with their professors, to involve the staff, to be there. One of the things that will expect of every student is that they go to the Office of Student Accommodation so that they are very clear about that they have some special needs, and also that they will meet with each individual professor as new courses begin to talk about the specialized types of supports and accommodations that they may be needing.
Mm-hmm. I focused a little bit on teachers and the coaching or experience that they might need under these circumstances. Is there some learning that fellow students might have to do when in a classroom setting with some students who are involved in this project?
We think in the ideal, that would be a great situation to try to make the environment as friendly and receptive as possible so that peers are not in a position where they might misunderstand mm-hmm. or become intolerant of. But the real world, moving from, you know, middle school to high school and on to, you know, higher education is such that the ability to manage that in a typical college classroom is a lot more difficult than it would be to do it in a high school classroom or a middle school classroom, for example, where you might be able to gather peers around and make them aware of so that the environment is a little more conducive. The difficulty, I think, you know, faced by any group of professionals as well as parents to try to do what is in the best interest of a person with Asperger's syndrome is twofold. One, how do you prepare them for the world the way it is? How do you impact the world the way it is to make it a little more receptive? So yes, predictability, cutting down on nuanced kinds of directions to students. We know that within the autism spectrum, the thinking is referred to oftentimes as concrete, pretty literal. On the other hand, the world doesn't work that way, and people with Asperger's syndrome can learn something about nuanced communication. But somewhere in that continuum, there needs to be a little give and take as you're teaching the skills to get by, trying to make the environment they're getting by a little more, if you will, Asperger-specific during that period of time.
Corey and Nolan, I wanted to give you the chance to talk, if you would, about some interactions that you may have had with fellow students or even with teachers. And I guess I'd be interested in hearing about particular successes or experiences that you thought were good, but if there were some challenges that you think might be helpful to the audience also. So, hard question?
I know during high school I had a photography teacher that when I was in her classroom, I felt the most comfortable to open up to the other students. And I also had a math teacher who was the same way. In the classroom, I felt a little more compelled to open up to my peers. And
was the experience with that teacher based on just the teacher's sort of innate sensibility? That was the way that, you know, that the way the teacher typically interacted with the class was a way that worked well for you, or did the teacher, do you think, adapt to your needs?
I think it was the way the teacher interacted with the class. That's what made it the best.
Oh. I once had a teacher in a business class who, it was basically to flip around, she, whenever I asked for more understanding about an assignment, she really didn't try to help me much. So I've actually had that experience a lot where I go and try and open myself up to a teacher to get more insight on a specific assignment or maybe a topic that we were going to discuss or such, and pretty much they just shun me away as asking stupid questions and not really trying to help me at all with certain assignments and such.
Mm-hmm. I understand. Dr. Larson, do you have a further thought?
No, not really this time around. I'm sorry.
Just agreeing with what Nolan said.
Saw my head nodding. It was more one of kind of empathy and understanding about what Nolan was talking about.
Very good. John Toscano.
Well, just to share a vignette that comes to mind as I think back to the time in the UK, we had a staff member who was running a group for young people with Asperger's syndrome, and during this group discussion, the student was answering a question and kind of wandered off topic. And the staff person said, "I think you've lost the plot," an expression that I think we all kind of know is nuanced, but we understand what it means. And then the topic was picked up by other students. And then a few minutes later, she recognized that this person had left her seat and was walking around the classroom in a very anxious way. And when asked what she was doing, she had tears in her eyes, and she said, "I'm sorry that I lost the plot, and I'm looking for it." Very concrete, very literal kinds of thinking. Now, this was a student more challenged with other issues, but it's an example of, if you are going to interact with people who have trouble understanding nuanced language or using some of those expressions, it takes a lot of moderation and monitoring to keep your language free of that and to keep direction very clear, very succinct. And those are skills that we hope to impart to everybody who's going to be, you know, working with these students.
You're tuned to a program on Asperger's syndrome and post-secondary education challenges that is sponsored by Commonwealth Autism Services and United Methodist Family Services, hosted here by WCVE Public Radio. Panel members on tonight's program are John Toscano, President and CEO of Commonwealth Autism Service, Dr. Donald Oswald, Director of Diagnostics and Research at Commonwealth Autism Service, Dr. Eric Larson, Vice President for Learning and Program Development at Charterhouse School, United Methodist Family Services, and Corey Wood and Nolan Parks, who are students with Asperger's syndrome, joining us on tonight's program. Gentlemen, I have received a large number of questions from members of our studio audience here this evening, and I'll try to get to as many of them as I can. I'll apologize up front to the live audience members who are here tonight that I doubt that I'll be able to reach all of them. I have some nuts and bolts just to start with. What can you tell me about funding for this project? Where did it come from, and how will it be provided ongoing?
At this point, the funding primarily will be coming from the families, the parents of the students who will be participating in the program. Beyond that, we have established a collaboration with GRASP, the Great Aspiration Scholarship Program here in Richmond, Virginia, who will be supporting with financial assistance for families that will depend on family income, but we are very grateful for that support, and we are currently exploring other avenues to see if we can seek additional funding sources.
That's Eric Larson, thank you. How many students do you need to start the program, and are you full?
We would love to say that we are full, but we are not. We need 12 students to start the program, and we currently have 6 or 7 students and their families who have expressed to us verbally that they are very committed, that they want that the young people want to be in this program, and the families want for them to be there. So we are very optimistic. We basically began advertising this program about 4 or 5 weeks ago, so we are very optimistic that we'll reach our number by August 15th.
I think you may have just answered my next question, but it is it too late to apply? Can people still get information?
Absolutely. The best way to contact us is by going to our website, which is www.charterhouseschool.org, where you will find information about the program when you click Courage to Succeed.
Next question is a little bit harder, I suspect, for people that that apply for the program and don't make it in for one reason or another. Are there how would you direct them? Are there avenues that they can pursue if this program happens to be filled up?
Oh, I would like to say that the number 12 is not necessarily a cap of how many we can have in the program. So if we end up with 15, we will explore the possibilities. For us, that primarily becomes an issue of finding the staff who can support the program. So I would say if we have 15 or 18, let's run for it.
Good. Dr. Larson, I'm sorry to monopolize your time, but the next question also seems to be for you. It asks, will Charterhouse staff be present in the classroom throughout the semester?
We had a meeting with Jason Reynolds' staff about a week ago, and one of the possibilities that we are exploring is that staff would be able to audit classes, to be guests in classrooms, provided that level of support is needed. I think that is one of the experiences that John had from the UK, that at times that was a helpful and necessary support, particularly in the beginning.
Mm-hmm. This question, I think, can really go to anyone on the panel, so I'll just I'll throw it open. The questioner indicates that for most students, transition planning starts at age 14. The question is, do you think the standard, what's described as cookie-cutter transition planning, is adequate for students with Asperger's syndrome, and what can be done to make a difference for them?
I would say our experience has generally been that schools have struggled to do adequate transition planning. And I think that's particularly true for individuals with Asperger's disorder. Our hope would certainly be, and we would want to support public schools in their mandate to provide transition planning beginning at least by age 14. But I think there are probably some specific things that public schools can do to prepare students with Asperger's syndrome to be more successful in higher education that would target some of the things that we've been talking about here today.
Dr. Oswald, is diagnosis an issue? I'm really a novice when it comes to this subject, but I've tried to read up. It seems that some of the writers suggest that diagnosing Asperger's syndrome may be delayed in some cases up to the college years.
That is true. It's not uncommon for folks to be at least in their teens before they are diagnosed. I have seen over the last number of years a number of adults who were diagnosed for the first time. And so it is not uncommon for folks with Asperger's to make their way through a good portion of their life without having been officially identified. Typically, doesn't mean that they haven't struggled. Most folks, even undiagnosed, will will experience challenges with regard to social situations and anxiety and depression, and will often receive other diagnoses along their way to receiving a diagnosis of Asperger's that captures maybe more completely the challenges that they face.
I think this is a kind of a tangential question, but it was asked by our audience, so I'll go ahead and bring it up. The questioner notes that anxieties in Asperger's syndrome children might lead to depression, and are there prescription medications or other sorts of ways to address that situation, that condition that you might want to discuss?
It's certainly the case that many folks with Asperger's disorder have found it helpful to work with a psychiatrist to identify medications that address anxiety and/or address depression. It is not uncommon for individuals with Asperger's to experience depression at some point in their life, often because there are many challenges that are just objectively difficult, and they find themselves really struggling in ways that they look around and see other people are not having to struggle so much. And so certainly in some cases medication can be helpful. We believe also that supports and behavioral interventions can also address some of the mental health challenges that folks face.
Again, a question that could be for any member of the panel. We've talked about socialization and potential difficulties that students with Asperger's syndrome might have in that direction. Are there social opportunities that are scheduled that are specific to the students in the program?
Some of the planned activities that will be involved in this program will be opportunities to generalize social skills both into the community college, but also into the community. One of the areas where we have at Charterhouse School and United Methodist Family Services been very successful over the years has been in the areas of providing our students with opportunities to participate in what we call service learning opportunities in the community, such as serving food at a homeless shelter, such as being involved in Meals on Wheels, being involved with Habitat for Humanity, or other places where they get an opportunity to not only interact and generalize socialized skills into the community, but also to have the experience of helping other people. We all know that one of the ways that our esteems are really affirmed when we feel worthy of helping other people. So we find great, great strength in involving our students in giving to others in the community and feeling as an experiencing being integrated members of the community to which I can contribute.
Nolan and Corey, again, have there, along these lines, have there been social opportunities, social settings that you've found to be useful or enjoyable?
Personally, I've actually found it more stressful to be in an environment when you're around other people. I think that, like in my own case, that I've actually found it less stressful to meet people on my own. But however the case, I have gone to like the food bank and I've gone to feed people at some homeless shelters, and I felt really good when I did it. And I did feel a really big sense of worthiness when I did such activities. So it does help. It helps build your self-esteem and such.
Mm-hmm. Corey, have you had any kind of experiences that you want to share with the group?
I know I worked briefly with the SPCA with dogs, and that was really helpful for me because I was able to work with little puppies and bigger dogs. I think that's what helped my self-esteem a little bit.
It's interesting. It seems as though part of what enables a number of people with Asperger's syndrome to achieve success, to achieve a productive role in society, is that aspect of finding a way to help others. That sort of public service, and people with Asperger's syndrome seem to go together. Is that an apt analysis? Eric, I saw you.
I don't have the experience to know if that is a situation where people come go together to do that. I do believe that from our own personal experiences that whenever young people are given the opportunity to take their hands out of their pockets and help others, they are always willing to do it. I have rarely seen young people who are not willing to reach out and help other people. So I think that there is great power in generosity and reaching out to other people in the community.
Mm-hmm. One of our audience members asks about group therapy and group setting opportunities and whether they are appropriate strategies in working with young people with Asperger syndrome.
I think they are, and in fact, I think they've been sort of the primary way social skills training has been delivered, social skills processing has been delivered. There are any number of groups that occur right here in the Richmond area and similar groups around the state. Some have been led by people with Asperger syndrome themselves. Others are led groups supported by an organization. My own experience with this in the UK has been, and we had the advantage of having 60 people in the program, with 24 living in residence and 36 coming as day students. So there was a cohort of 60. There were numerous opportunities for subgroups to get together, to do things in the community, and to support each other in that process. And students who were further along in the program could mentor those students who were coming along. To Eric's point, I think one of the dangers that exists in when you start to speak clinically about a condition is that for the uninitiated, there may be this viewpoint that they are the Asperger syndrome. They aren't. They have Asperger syndrome. Hmm. They're not, dominated by it without, their own humanity still existing. So people in the situation where we're discussing need to be supported, but they have the same desire to support and feel good about that process of giving back, and that's something that the program will reinforce.
John, you mentioned the fact that the program that you worked with in the UK had had some students in residence and some students who were not residents. I don't think that is necessarily an issue with the program here in the Richmond area, but is that worth talking about a little bit? It seems that that students with Asperger's syndrome in a residential setting might face challenges that that other students wouldn't encounter.
Well, at the risk of, we've been asked about, sort of post-community college and do we have plans, and I think the goals, dreams, and aspirations of the people in the program will eventually push, the parameters of the kinds of things we would hope to do in partnership. The advantage of the residential component of it is, in essence, you create a 24-hour learning opportunity. And that was one of the things that the program in the UK was able to offer. There are other programs around the country that do have residential options for people with Asperger syndrome. And have had some success. So it's not to suggest that it's any more of a challenge. In fact, it has the potential to be more of an asset.
I want to wrap up with one last question that was submitted by an audience member. I hope it's a fun question. I guess we'll find out. Have there been famous people who have been successful in dealing with Asperger's, names that we might recognize?
There's certainly a number of folks who have self-identified as individuals with Asperger's, and others that have been identified by people watching them. Bill Gates comes to mind. He is certainly someone who has been massively successful. He's a fascinating person. He's obviously brilliant. And share some of the features, certainly, that we've been talking about tonight. Other folks have been, self-identified, and I think it is useful for us to be aware of the range of of talent and ability that is out there. I'm a little bit conflicted about the movement toward identifying particular historical figures as having had Asperger's. I find that not particularly useful. I think it is useful for people to be aware that there's not a ceiling on the potential for individuals with Asperger's, and hope that that can give folks some hope around that.
John.
Well, just in the spirit of that the question was asked, hopefully a funny or humorous angle to it. I think much of the retrospective diagnoses that have happened, as Donald said, not particularly helpful to go back and look at historical figures. Most of us know Temple Grandin. She's seen as a person with high-functioning autism, and there's always been a debate in the field, is there a line of demarcation between high-functioning autism and Asperger's syndrome? But she says it in a very powerful way. She said, the world needs all of our minds, and how important that is. The funny side of this, Bill, is I think a lot of wives have retrospectively diagnosed their husbands over the years since this has become more public.
John, in closing, would you like to pass along places where people can go to get more information about the program?
Well, as Eric has already given out the website for United Methodist Family Services and Charterhouse School, we would certainly direct folks there. People are free to contact Commonwealth Autism Service, not just for information about this program, but for any information that they might need about a child with autism or a child with Asperger's syndrome across the state.
John Toscano is President and CEO of Commonwealth Autism Service, and he was joined tonight by Dr. Eric Larson, Vice President for Learning and Program Development at Charterhouse School, United Methodist Family Services, Dr. Donald Oswald, Director of Diagnostics and Research at Commonwealth Autism Service, and Corey Wood and Nolan Parks, who are students with Asperger's syndrome and members of our panel this evening. Gentlemen, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That's our broadcast of WCVE Forum for this evening. We want to extend our thanks for production assistance to Paul Adams, Peter Solomon, and Craig Keaton. I'm Bill Miller. Thank you for being with us. Good night.